You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
You're listening to BGN Radio with Brandon Lee Gowton and Jimmy Kemsky.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? This is BGN Radio, episode number 267. I'm Jimmy Kemsky with PhillyVoice.com. With me, as always, is Brandon Lee Gowton of BleedingGreenNation.com. I have to get to a pool. My daughter is waiting for me there. So we're going to kind of harry this episode along. What I mean by that is we'll go from point to point. We'll get to a bunch of stuff, but we'll move it along in this episode. But before we do, Brandon, where can we get the best meat snacks in the land?
RighteousFelon.com. Discount code BGN20 for 20% off. Jimmy, let's just get right into today's show. Where do you want to start?
Well, I think we got to start with the trade that happened during the off day on Monday. Yeah, today's Tuesday. Is that right? All these days are bleeding together at this point. But the Eagles trade tight end J.J. Arcega-Whiteside to the Seattle Seahawks for, we'll call him defensive back. He's kind of a slot corner slash safety. Ugo Amadi, who I think Sheil used to like back in his time with, or I don't know if he was still there. I remember him talking about Ugo at one point. Whatever. He's a cornerback slash safety. Has actually played in a decent, he's actually has decent experience in the NFL. He's played a bunch of games, started, I don't have my notes up in front of him.
It's like 17 games in front of me
right
so.
Now, but like 12, 14 games. Yeah.
Something like that.
Started. So he had 50 something tackles last year, an interception, a forced fumble. So he's at least a guy who has played, because I think that Jaquiski Tartt, rather, is not working out. He was a signing that the Eagles made in June. He's been totally invisible in training camp and practices that he's been at. He was not at a few practices in between. But yeah, today, the safeties... And I guess we may as well just say this right now since we're on safeties, but Marcus Epps was out. Anthony Harris was in. So Harris started. He played, but he got all the first team reps. And then that other safety spot, they sort of rotated guys in like Josiah Scott, Kayvon Wallace, and Reed Blankenship got first team reps today. Guys who did not get first team reps, interestingly, were Andre Sacheré and Jaquiski Tartt. So... not looking good for Jaquiski Tartt with this trade for Ugo Amadi. It's worth noting that Ugo Amadi is in his fourth year, and because he had enough qualifying snaps played his first 3 years in the NFL, he earned what is called a player performance escalator.
Nerd.
Which means that he's going to count on the salary cap for $2.5 million, roughly. So it's expensive. He's an expensive player for the kind of role that he would serve with the Eagles should he make the team. Possible they can get him to lower that number. I wonder if the Seahawks tried to do the same and Ugo said piss off and then they traded him to the Eagles instead. But of course, the bigger story from the Eagles' perspective is that J.J. Arcega-Whiteside is no longer on the team. Second round pick, of course, in 2019. Yep. And of course, the irony here is that he now is teammates with the player that the Eagles should have drafted, DK Metcalf. Right.
Maybe he can outshine him there. Maybe he's going to go there and be like, you know what, DK? I'm the better draft pick after all, baby.
That's right.
You know, it's a worthwhile trade is how I'll describe it for the Eagles. I'm not going to give them a gold star for this because you have to, I think, add the context of, you know, JJ being a bust, which know, to his credit, as we've talked about before, I think he did a good job of rebranding himself last season as total bust into salvageable, like at least like contributing as a special teams player.
Enforcer.
I was just going to say, Sirianni called him their enforcer shortly after last season. That role clearly now belongs to Zach Pascal, who is an upgraded version of Jajal, actually can do some things as a pass catcher. So, you know, whatever. Good luck to JJ. Nothing against him in terms of, you know, I think he worked hard. Like you said, he wasn't good and, you know, he tried. It wasn't for a lack of effort. It wasn't for a lack of focus. Just ended up not being that good. So disappointing.
Yeah, he'll be a player that's forgotten, I think, pretty quickly, as opposed to, you know, a player that sort of leaves a distaste in Marcus the mouths of fans for an extended period of time, because he wasn't a jerk. He was a nice guy.
Sure.
Like you said, he played hard. He tried to do anything he possibly could to help the team, special teams, move to tight end, whatever you want to call it. And he just, like you said, he just wasn't a good football player by NFL standards. So, the JJ era is over. To be determined if the Eagles will continue to trade other disappointing high picks, such as Andre Dillard. I think that's not super likely, but possible. And Jalen Reagor, which I think is a legit possibility. And of course, we have joint practices coming up I guess we'll get to that more about that a little bit later, but they begin on Thursday and Friday. I think solid performances by guys like Dillard and Reagor are similar to performances that they're putting on tape in preseason games, because all these teams kind of talked like they're scout. All these scouts talk to each other.
Yeah.
And you know, a scout isn't going to trust what a Philadelphia scout says about Jalen Reagor or Andre Dillard, but they're going to trust what a Brown scout says about Andre Dillard or Jalen Reagor. So we'll see how they play in these joint practices. But as far as practice goes,
I did have one more note. Sorry, on Ugo Amadi.
Yep.
Kind of undermentioned. He did have 14 punt returns for 223 yards in his final season at Oregon, which is a 15.9 average, which is really good. I still think he had a touchdown in there too. So also, you know, you could throw him in the mix as returner as well. I love the idea of a defensive back, cornerback, or safety who returns punts. That's exciting to me. And there's some juice there. I don't know if he's actually any good at in the NFL. He hasn't done it, I think, since college. But I just feel like it's worth mentioning that he might also take some reps there.
All right. Practice today.
Do you hear that outside my window?
No.
Okay, good.
I hear something.
What giant was that? Like dump truck or something.
I did hear that. Trash truck's
like rumbling very loud outside. Sorry, everyone.
There was a guy blowing leaves outside my house too. I don't know if you heard that or not.
Blowing leaves.
Anyway,
freaking August 16th.
Yeah, we're blowing something. There's kind of debris. Actually, there are a lot of leaves kind of down too.
What the heck?
Because there was, I don't know, it was windy a couple days ago and leaves probably, whatever.
This has been your BGN radio weather report.
Practice today. It was practice number 12 of training camp. And it was the final media attended practice at the NovaCare complex.
Yes.
So again, we'll have two more joint practices in Cleveland. We'll have two joint practices in Miami. But this was the last training camp practice in Philadelphia at the NovaCare complex. No pads, just helmets today. So they actually went like an hour and a half today. So it was a decent enough, practice. Where do you want to start?
I guess we can start with Jalen Hurts. I thought through a certain point of practice, he was kind of more going to have a stock even day. Thought there was some issues earlier on where, well, he actually started off practice with a really nice, lofted the ball to Zach Pascal in the front right corner of the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
Pascal was pretty wide open, but you know, credit to him for getting open on that play. Slay was kind of trailing there a little bit, like a soft spot, I guess, in the zone. But after that, I thought he wasn't so great because the offense failed to punch it into the end zone after that in this red zone 11-on-11 series where I thought he took multiple sacks in that drill. And there's one play where I thought he was sacked, but he got the ball off to Pascal in the front right, back right corner, I should say, of the end zone. And the ref, I was standing right in front of that play too, and Pascal was not in, and the ref also ruled him out. And again, I thought it was a sack anyway. Didn't, like, you know, play was basically over. So not the best start, but I think he kind of rebounded. He had a good completion to Devontae Smith along the left sideline. Also a play that was probably a sack. Not his fault on that time, though. Whereas I thought he was holding onto the ball too long earlier. That play, Reddick had just like instantly got into the backfield to kind of blow him up. But he ended up rolling left, which is something that is not really a strength of his, or at least hasn't been to this point. And he fired a nice pass, or at least a pass that gave a chance for Devontae Smith to make a really nice leaping catch along the sideline, keeping both feet in. And then I think what was the play of the day, objectively, I might take a different play for our standing sake here, what we do at the end. But, I mean, I thought he had a really good ball. Probably his best, arguably his best throw of training camp when he hit A.J. Brown down the right sideline. It was out quick, decisive. There's a lot of zip on that throw. Placement was perfect to beat Josh Jobe, who had been filling in for James Bradbury, cornerback one, and then Kayvon Wallace, who was also in. So not the best secondary there, but still, it was a really high-quality throw, I thought.
Yeah, James Bradbury left practice early today, by the way, went to the medical tent. I don't think he came back, so updates will be...
He didn't come back in the drills, but I thought I saw him on the sideline.
Okay. Well, updates will be forthcoming on him, I imagine. But I agree with your throw on the right, down the right sideline.
Yeah.
So normally you put loft on that throw and try to lead him down the field, but I thought the throw he muscled it in, had some heat on it because it had to beat Kayvon Wallace to the spot, who was coming over from his safety spot. And yeah, I agree, that was a great throw. And it's another decision that the quarterback has to make, making that throw, seeing the field, and knowing that the safety is eyeballing that and knowing to muscle it in there in that circumstance, as opposed to lofting it down the field. Great throw. I've actually thought Kayvon was a little slow getting over there, but the throw beat him. Sure. And yeah, I mean, it's not Hurts' fault that Kayvon was slow getting over, but I agree. Great throw by him for sure. The other throw that I thought was good was it was a sack again, like you mentioned, and they just kept the rep alive anyway. And he rolled to his left and he threw to Devontae Smith, who went up high for the second time in two practices. He had nice hops for a pass near the sideline.
Yeah. He's good, man. He's a good player.
Devontae Smith is very good for sure. I mean, we've been talking about AJ Brown all camp, and part of that is because Devontae Smith missed some time, but Devontae is starting to hit his stride. And he's had some really nice catches the last 2 days. And this one happened to be, he was coming back toward his quarterback, who was scrambling around and looking for somebody. It was an off schedule play at that point. I mean, play was dead because it was a sack, but again, they kept the rep alive. And he did a really nice job going up for that pass. Ball had heat on it, and he, with good hands, snagged it out of the air, kept his feet in, stayed in bounds. He had another catch again along the sideline where he caught it and was hit, but I think, did you mention this already, by Josh Sweat?
No, I mentioned the first one you mentioned.
Who is oddly way out on the perimeter.
Yeah, ignore that
on
part.
That play in coverage. Josh Sweat was basically in coverage on Devontae, or he's in the area, and he pushed Devontae as he was making the catch and going out of bounds. Devontae kept both feet in. So, I mean, the Eagles receivers look good, man, with A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Quez, we know, can do some things. And Zach Pascal's looked good too, as we mentioned as well. So those top four guys, I mean, it's the best top four group of receivers I think that they've had in some time. I think that the best comparison would be, Macklin, D-Jax, Jason Avant. I don't even remember who their fourth receiver would have been at that time, but I think this group of four is I guess it would be, yeah. But I think this group of four is really something, is really a group that can do some damage this season.
I agree. And then, we've talked about Rager too, who still not like, I don't like trust him when he's out there. I'm not going to be like, oh, he can make a play, but he's been more encouraging than he previously.
Good catch today too.
Really good catch today in a tight window, diving catch as going to the ground. Still think, again, best situation there for everyone involved as he gets traded. And I just don't think it makes the most sense in the world just to keep him as a fifth receiver and like just in case of emergency use him because you're not getting like good value out of that in terms of your roster spots and special teams and everything. But in any case, it's a 1 through 5 really, even it's just, it's a good group. I mean, you could easily have worse fifth receivers than I think what Rager kind of is showing you right now in camp. So definitely that's encouraging. What else?
Before we move on, let's keep it with receiver one for one last thing. Britton Covey had a ton of catches today, all over the field, primarily over the middle. There was maybe some thought that his roster spot was in peril after how did that go? Did he post on his own social media account, whether it was Instagram or whatever, that he tore
Ed Kratz ligaments in his... I saw, good friend Ed Kratz had posted, he had tweeted after the game on Friday night something about Covey saying to him that he had sprained ligaments in his thumb and would be out for a decent amount of time.
Yeah, so it's just a thumb sprain, basically. He was limited, I believe, on Sunday. It was a full go today. Mm-hmm. Again, caught passes all over the field. So he's back. Like forget that injury. That injury is a non-factor at this point. He's going to be a full go during joint practices and presumably for the second preseason game against the Browns as well.
What else do you want to get into? What are some of the other observations?
So, I thought Kenny Gainwell has had an underwhelming camp.
I was also going to get to him.
You and I debated a little bit on, so I thought he had two drops today. Mm-hmm. One was clear. It was an out route. I hit him in the hands and dropped it.
That was on the right side of the field. Yeah.
The other was a back shoulder throw in the end zone. Ball had heat on it. He had to dive a little bit for it. I think it's a play he should have made. You thought it was maybe I was being a little hard on him. Definitively, you would agree that was a drop at least though, right?
I don't know if he should have made it. I think he had a chance, but I think it would have been a really hard catch to make.
Okay. And then we argued over who had the better vantage point on that.
I was standing right in front of him. I was literally like 5 feet in front of me, and you were at the back of the end zone. You were at least like 30 feet away.
All right, I'll concede.
But point being,
God,
he just hasn't had the kind of training camp you would want to see from a player who people have been thinking might be able to make a leap from year one to year two, especially as a pass catcher. And I saw some of that. There's some, like I tweeted out during today's practice that I don't think he's made the kind of leap that you would want to see. And some people had responded like, well, you know, how much can you get out of a running back in practice? And I think generally there is some truth to that. But first of all, I mean, Miles Sanders looks pretty good in practice. It's pretty, you know, you can tell he looks good as a runner. So don't fully agree with that. And number two, pass catching running back. You would think that player, more than any other kind of running back, would stand out in a practice setting. And he really hasn't. And now, in fairness, I thought Gainwell really came alive last training camp in the joint practices specifically and later in camp. So maybe he's going to save that again. But to this point, and, you know, we're 12 practices in, I just haven't seen anything that really makes you go, oh, that's intriguing or special. I think he's kind of been fine at best, and at worst, like your third best running back option.
So I think that when you look back to like when Darren Sproles was here, he'd make plays all the time in the passing game during practices. And I'm not even talking like Darren's new and exciting to the team, Darren Sproles. I mean, like toward the back end of his Eagles career, he'd be making plays like that pretty consistently in practice. Like when it was like, oh, he's back again. Mm-hmm. And then like he would have good practices. He would stack good practices and make catches all over the field. And Gainwell just hasn't done that.
Nope.
And when opportunities have come his way, he hasn't made, all the plays that I think he should have made. And, I wonder when you get into the regular season, and I've mentioned this before, but there's a balance that you have to try to figure out between, do you want him on the field to create mismatches against linebackers and safeties, or are you better off just putting your best players on the field and throwing to them no matter who they're matched up against? Mm. And I lean heavily toward the latter. Just your best players are going to win games for
players,
you.
Players, not plays.
Yes, exactly. So he's had a disappointing camp in my opinion. And any thought that Miles Sanders is anything other than the number one running back and then everyone else is a distant number two is just flat out wrong.
I feel like I have more trust in Boston Scott than Gainwell right now.
I agree.
Not that I think Scott is a limited ceiling. I think he's a nice, you know, kind of backup running back, rotational guy. But I think he gives me a higher floor than what Kenny Gainwell does. Not that Gainwell has been like a disaster or terrible, but just kind of underwhelming is what I would say. So that's on him. Anyone else that you want to get to?
that's on him.
That's on him.
Yeah. So I think we should also mention Dallas Goedert.
Okay.
Who he's one of these guys now that we don't talk about in our practice notes or on the podcast because we know he's a good player. Mm-hmm. We know he's a complete tight end. We know he's got pretty much no holes in his actual game, aside from maybe some durability concerns.
Drops here
and there. So we know what he is, and you know what he is. All the listeners, all the readers, they know exactly what Dallas Goedert is. He's been dominant, and we've talked a lot about how much Jalen Hurts is throwing to AJ Brown. Well, Dallas Goedert is getting a very healthy share of targets as well, and he's connected with we saw him, you know, have a touchdown, of course, in the preseason game. Where he kind of like jumped backwards and into the end zone after like a scissor concept.
That was a weird touchdown, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Like, it's not a normal touchdown throw.
He kind of like, it was almost like he was like the goofy uncle, like jumping into the pool the way that he went in. But he's had a great camp, in my opinion. And we mentioned the four receivers, of course, earlier in Brown and Smith and Pascal and Quez. Dallas Goedert is, you know, going to be probably the. Who do you think gets more targets? I think we both agree at this point that AJ Brown is going to get more targets than Devontae Smith.
Safe to say.
Who's going to get more targets between Dallas Goedert and Devontae Smith?
It might be Goedert.
I think I agree.
Yeah, and that's not me, obviously, not believing in Devontae Smith. I just think reading the room.
No, you're like Devontae Smith number one.
I know, but just looking at the situation in terms of who like Hurts actually likes to throw to. I think he seems to like to throw to AJ and Goedert more. And now, you know, Devontae has been getting mixed in a good amount more recently, so that's nice to see, mm-hmm. better balance. But if we're talking about order, I think it's AJ Brown 1, Goedert 2, Devontae Smith 3. Although I think 2 and 3 will be closer as opposed to, I think it's going to be a gap after AJ, and then 2 and 3 will be close.
You look at, like, number one receiver, number two receiver, number one tight end, the combination of those, like, three specific players. There aren't that many teams in the NFL that can match what the Eagles have there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, anyway, bottom line, Dallas Goedert had a big day today, and he's had a lot of big days in this camp. We just haven't mentioned him. I thought he was worth mentioning today.
I agree. That connection Hurts to Goedert was very active, especially in the red zone when they were doing some red zone stuff. And that first 11-on-11 red zone sequence, I didn't think was very good for Hurts. But then there was a couple, at least one later, where he was actively hitting Goedert a lot, and that was better to see. Anything else before we take a break?
Well, are we going to get to Hurts after the break?
Well, yeah, we'll do his stock report after the break.
All right. Well, let me tell you about Kristen Roach of Roach Realtors then. 856-906-9295. If you're looking to buy or sell your home, God rated Kristen Roach as the best realtor in the history of the universe. Again, 856-906-9295. Brandon.
Back after this.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom. Mom, I'm going to the bathroom. I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
We're back here on VGN Radio, which is brought to you by Kristen Roach of Roach Realtors, roachrealtors.com, in addition to Righteous Felon Craft Jerky, which you can get for yourself by going to RighteousFelon.com. Again, no commitment when you just go to the website. Website is free. You go there, you look at what they have. Doesn't cost you a thing. If you want to buy something, though, use discount code BGN20 for a special time right now. Limited offer, BGN20, to get 20% off your order. You want to do that now because eventually it's going to go back to BGN15, where you only get 15% off. So why don't you capitalize on that right now? BGN20 for 20% off your order at RighteousFelon.com.
Do it!
Jimmy, it's time.
Yes.
To get into our superlatives here, starting with Jalen Hurts' stock report. Again, I thought at a certain point in practice, I think I had asked, you know, BGN alumnus Mike Kay, I was like, what are you thinking about Jalen Hurts' performance today? And definitely not a stock down. It was between stock up and stock even. And that was before the A.J. Brown throw, which was a really impressive throw. So I think that kind of solidified it as a stock up day for him. So I think, and I asked you after practice as well, and you said stock up. So that's where we're going.
Yeah, I'm a stock up. One thing I did want to touch on with Jalen Hurts real quick was Elliot asked Nick Sirianni on Sunday about what he thought of Hurts' decision-making in the first preseason game as it pertains to, you know, leaving the pocket, leaving a clean pocket, whether he was, you know, whether he did a good job staying in the pocket or leaving the pocket when justified. And the answer that Nick Sirianni gave was essentially that you're not only leaving the pocket when protection breaks down. Like you might, if there's nobody open initially or a receiver slips or something like that, you might leave the pocket even if the pocket's still clean because you know you're going to have to buy time eventually and find somebody down the field on an off schedule play. So he kind of got into that on Sunday. And then Shane Steichen talked today. He got asked a similar question about that. And, you know, it's kind of become a thing, as it should, like, because there have been times where Jalen Hurts is in the pocket and he's got a clean pocket and there are receivers that are open. So like what Nick Sirianni is talking about isn't like, doesn't apply all the time because there are receivers open sometimes down the field that he's either not seeing or he doesn't trust to pull the trigger. Most notably, you know, in the Buccaneers playoff game last year. But I did just want to note quickly though, I do think Sirianni's point is valid. And I remember back to like 2019 when we were kind of nitpicking the opposite, rightfully so, by the way, of Carson Wentz, where I don't know, do you remember this one when there was a big thing about trying to get him out of the pocket more and on the move?
Doug's not using him right.
So it was kind of like the opposite where, you know, we were saying Carson Wentz has to get out of the pocket and make more plays from outside the pocket, whereas, you know, we're saying now Jalen Hurts needs to make the plays that are there from the pocket as opposed to, you know, leaving the pocket. So we're kind of like pocket bullies in a sense in Philadelphia. It's kind of like a weird thing that we do here. And we've done that with other quarterbacks in the past as well. You know, not every quarterback is going to be Aaron Rodgers who can sit in the pocket and just pick you apart all day from the pocket. And also can get outside the pocket and make crazy throws on the run and make plays with his legs. Like not everyone is going to be that. And certainly Jalen Hurts is not, you know, like Tom Brady from the pocket. And he's not anything close to that, obviously. But I think, you know, the trade-off of him not, you know, seeing everything from the pocket or being willing to make every throw from the pocket and, you know, maybe leaving the pocket when his protection hasn't yet broken down. I think the trade-off on what he gives you with his ability to make plays with his legs and on the move, I think you're like, for the most part, you know, that trade-off is fine. Certainly you want to see the improvement from the pocket and him being able to make plays there. But as far as today goes, like I thought that when he left the pocket quite a bit today, but when he did, he made plays when he did. And that's sort of like, it is one of the positive traits of his game in that he can extend plays and you know, make plays off, like making off schedule plays is the best part of his game, in my opinion. You want to be careful not to put into his head too much that you have to stay in the pocket. Because I think if he loses sort of the thought of, you know, having the freedom to to make plays with his legs and get on the run and make throws on the run, then you sort of compromise what his sort of like instincts and how he makes plays on the football field, as opposed to trying to make him something he's not.
Yeah, I mean, I don't.
Does that make sense to you?
I've never criticized him for that, but like, that's not my criticism.
Oh no, I'm not targeting this at you by any means.
Yeah, no, I get that, but I'm just saying, like, to me, I don't disagree, but it's not about him having to win from the pocket always. It's about, I think, a little bit more often, and it's about decision making and seeing the field. I think it's inarguable that he's held the ball on for too long in his career to this point. As a rookie, he had a 3.39 average time to throw in terms of seconds. That was the slowest in the league. Next closest was Lamar Jackson at 3.17. So that's like a big gap too. That 0.22 gap. So now last year yes. in 2021, I'm pulling it up here.
3.0 something, right?
It was still
longest in the league.
It was still longest in the league. Improved from 3.39 to 3.21, but still again, the next closest after that is Jameis. Winston and Lamar both at 3.09. I just think that's too long. I don't think you want to be that guy. I don't think you want to. I think some of that speaks to his ability to create plays on the run. I agree. And I don't need him to be Tom Brady all of a sudden and like have the fastest release. Actually, it was like it was Brady last year and Big Ben. They were like at 2.27 and 2.35. They're two of the fastest. I don't need him to be that, but I think I need him to be somewhat like maybe under. Like, let's say Josh Allen, let's take him for example. He's at like 2.8, which is 0.4 seconds quicker, which I think is significant. I mean, that seems kind of crazy. In reality, 0.4 seconds is not a lot, but I think you'd like to see
Average over the course of a season, it certainly is.
Yeah, right. But I'm talking about this, like, you know, a moment in time, 0.4. But I think it's significant. I think it's too long. And like, I thought Jalen Hurts had a good day today. Yes, to be clear. And there were times like the AJ Brown throw where, and I love to see it, quick, decisive, ball is out, boom. I like to see that a lot. But I think I go back to that early sequence in the red zone, holding the ball. Even the throw to Devontae, which, you know, was a sack. And I said it wasn't on him. But the point is, there's a lot of plays in practice. So let me strike that. Not the Devontae play. My bad job by me. But there's been a lot of plays in practice where, like, he's just been sacked and he gets the ball off anyway. And like fans in attendance and maybe the stats show like it was a good play, but it's like, it's a sack, man. He's holding on to the ball for forever. So I've said it a billion times. I'll say it again. I think it's been feast or famine in terms of him either like getting the ball really quick and knowing what to do with it, or like panicking, kind of like getting it and they're just not seeing it and kind of just holding. And I just think he holds onto the ball too long at certain times, which might manifest again in another season where he's like has one of the slowest time to throws in the NFL. And I don't think that extreme point is where you want to be ideally.
I think there's been some improvement there. It's not where you want it to be, obviously. But I think, and it's a work in progress, no doubt. And he does hang on to the ball for a long time.
I will say, for sure. Also, like, sorry to cut you in there, but I'm thinking like, okay, if he's going to hold on to the ball, better be like a big play, you know, make a big play or like an important play that's worth it. Not like hold on to the ball forever so you can get like a 5-yard check down. Like, what is that? Like, what is that really? You know what I mean? It's one thing if you're holding on to it because there's risk in holding on to it. It could be a fumble, could be a sack, whatever. Like, if you're going to take that risk, like, let's see it, make it worth it. Like, try to extend for a big play as opposed to you're extending it just because like you're kind of lost and there's no one there. And I'm also tired of hearing that no one's open, because guess what? You have to have anticipatory throws at some point. You have to throw people open. And that's another thing why I don't kind of believe in him in a bigger picture. I don't think he's necessarily done that to the fullest extent where I believe in that ability where he's throwing receivers open and throwing to a spot and letting them make a play in time like that. So anyway, stack up.
Well, he has receivers that are going to get open this year. So that's not going to be an excuse during the regular season this year, because you know, last year his receiver, Devontae Smith, and he had Dallas Goedert. And beyond that, he's, you know, Rager's out there for like 700 snaps. And JJ's out there like sometimes. So like, you know, it's we already said in this very podcast, already, you know, kind of went through the receivers and the tight end and how good they're going to be this year. Those guys are going to get open. So that's not going to be an excuse this year. But, you know, I certainly agree with the point that that you have to throw guys open sometimes, and anticipation throws are going to certainly help with that. But again, like you don't want to totally sap him of, you know, his playmaking instincts though as well.
Sure. It's about finding the right balance as with most things. So stock up day for him again.
Yeah.
I mean, I was critical there, but I think in this day specifically, he was good. And
for sure,
let's see if he can stack those days. I'm going to feel a lot better about him and a lot better about the team if he's going out against Cleveland and if he's going out against Miami and he's looking like pretty good and he's beating up on those defenses.
Who's your MVP?
Noah Tongiai, baby. He had a really good catch and it's kind of a, cumulative thing for him. We've talked about him before. I think he deserves some love. I think he's making plays out there. And we've talked about this before about could he make the roster? And you were like, they're probably not going to cut Calcaterra. And I mean, like, Calcaterra has missed a lot of practice time now. And also, the age difference isn't that big. Noah Tongiai is playing his age 25 season this year, turned 25 in July. Calcaterra is playing his age 24 season this year. It's not that Calcaterra is the super young, high upside prospect guy, and you're kind of going with the lower ceiling person in Tongiai. Like, it's not that big of a difference. And I think, for a third tight end spot like that, I think you kind of have to go with a guy who might be more available. Because the other thing too, I just still think, going back to one of the negatives of drafting Calcaterra, how do you kind of weigh what happens if he gets a concussion again? Is he going to retire again? Is he going to walk away? I think that's a fair question to kind of wonder about if you're the team, because it's happened before. So I would lean with Tongiai right now.
Tongiai's had, Calcaterra's barely even played. So obviously Tongiai's had a much better camp. And he's made a lot of catches every day in practice. He had four catches in the preseason game. Big day today, as you mentioned. I can't see them keeping him over Calcaterra. I think Calcaterra is going to be on the team. This is Tongiai's third season. So he almost made the team his rookie year as an undrafted free agent in 2020. Mm-hmm. They cut him. Colts claimed him. Colts cut him. Eagles, nobody even claimed him. The Eagles just signed him to their practice squad. He was a, what do they call them? He signed a futures contract with the Eagles this offseason in January or February or whatever it was. And those guys typically, guys of that kind of profile, have a steep uphill climb to make the team. And typically, if you do cut them at cutdowns, you're going to be able to get them back on the practice squad. So I think they could safely bring him back.
Maybe.
Whereas I think a guy like Calcaterra, it's going to get claimed by somebody. I mean, we're talking about a guy who was a sixth round pick. Somebody, I'm sure other teams liked him in the draft, and they go, what? He had a hamstring injury and that's why they cut him? Really? I'll take him. Because, not all these teams have as good a depth as the Eagles do. This year is a little bit different for the Eagles in terms of looking at the 53, in that in previous seasons, you could easily get to 46 or 47 players and feel really good about them. And then you're just kind of like, all right, I guess I'll keep him to get to 53. Whereas this year, it's really easy to get to 53 and maybe in 54, 55. And it's hard making the final two or three cuts. I think, this guy should make the team or this guy should make the team. But you have to leave them off because there's just not enough room for them. So that's kind of where we're at this year. And I think the tight end position is a good example of that, because it's not always fair, because Tongiai should make the team clearly over Calcaterra, but Calcaterra is a draft pick and he played decent enough, I guess, the first couple practices before he got hurt, but he's going to get every opportunity to show what he can do or whatever. He better get back quick though. He can't just be out into the regular season with and expect to make the team. I wouldn't imagine he's got to get back at some point, or else somebody's going to make the team over him, I would imagine. This is I think Tongiai's camp is a clear example, potentially clear example, if he gets cut, of how unfair training camp can be for some of these guys.
Maybe the Eagles wouldn't mind if Calcaterra came back a little too early, and then
you just IR him.
Well, yes, what I mean, tweak his hamstring worse, and then to the point where they put him on the long term, the full season IR, pre 53 player roster cut down IR. where he's just out for the year. I think they wouldn't mind that. I think that would actually be the ideal situation. Give him a year to kind of spend on a stash. And then Tanguy is probably more ready right now to be that tight end three. Yeah. But yeah, I'll give my MVP point to him. I think he's had a good camp. And oh, and I don't know if I even described the play, but the play was that Gardner Minshew kind of floated a ball into the end zone high where Tanguy could make a play on it and the defense couldn't. And he basically just mossed Ondé Sasseré, just went up, got it, caught it like right over. And Sasseré didn't even have bad coverage, just wasn't as big as him, wasn't able to defend it. And an offense was pretty fired up about that play too. Like everyone was in the end zone celebrating after that one. That was a pretty legit catch. And I think like the celebration there kind of spoke to, at least at some level, like players being happy for him. Like that's a guy who's had a good camp. Uh-huh. He deserved that play. We're all happy for you. Like you deserve that touchdown. So sportsmanship.
I'll actually piggyback off that play too. Okay. I thought he had separation on Sasseré on that play. I thought the ball was actually not a great ball by Gardner Minshew. It was a little behind. Well,
I thought
him.
He gave it a chance to make a play. Like he put
He put it up. He put it up high. He put it like the where he had it height wise was where it had to be.
Agree.
But he threw it behind him a little bit, so Tanguy had to come back for the ball and actually gave Sasseré a chance to make a play on the ball. But as you said, Tanguy mossed him in the back of the end zone. And yeah, there's a good celebration after. In fact, Jeff Stoutland was yelling at offensive linemen to get in the end zone and celebrate. Like, who did he say? Coyote, get your ass in the end zone. And then Jack Anderson, get your ass in the end zone. Then they had to like run in and celebrate with them. So yeah, that was like a kind of an exciting play for you know the second team offense against the second team defense.
They just like Doug always had him do that too. He would want the guys to celebrate. Like if you earn that celebration, go out and celebrate, man. Like you know, like it's I think there's an alpha mentality to that too in terms of like make the defense feel like embarrass the defense. Now that you've scored on them, like rub it in, make them feel even worse for giving up that play.
That's right.
All right. Who's your MVP?
I'm going Goddard. I already talked about him, so we can just move right along.
Who is your
LVP?
I'll let you go first.
I don't know yet. If you have one, let it rip.
It's Kenny Gainwell. I mean,
I'll go Kenny Gainwell. I'll go double Kenny Gainwell because I think it's because he doesn't have any yet, right?
Correct. It's not that he had a disastrous practice, but I think it's just been it's more of a cumulative thing. Didn't have a good practice, and also just hasn't had the kind of summer you would want to see from him.
Yeah, and I don't have anything more to add because we already touched on him earlier. So what's your play of the day?
It's to me, I feel like you're going to go. Are you going to go with the A.J. Brown one?
I'm going the A.J. Brown one.
So I don't want to double up on that because I feel like it's not fair to give. And poor Noah Tanguy kind of getting shafted a little bit here in the play of the day that there was other two catches.
A bunch of good plays today.
But I did give him the MVP. Yeah, and there were good plays, so it's tough. But I'm going to give the Devontae catch along the left sideline. I was right in front of that too, and that was just like really – I just thought it was incredible how – not only, again, does he leap up and get the ball pretty high, but like the ability to keep 2 feet in bounds. And it's so clearly like he's just so under control and it's such skill. It's not just luck. Like he's very such a technically like he's a precision player. He is very skilled and he's deserving of it. So I'm biased.
He doesn't look as skinny to me this year as he did last year. I mean, he's still very skinny. Mm-hmm. Like, let's not get that twisted. But I feel like last year, when we first saw him on the field, it was like, wow, that guy is really skinny. Mm-hmm. And I kind of don't feel that way about him this year. I think he put on some muscle.
All right.
Does that seem right to you or no?
I don't notice a huge difference.
I mean, he looked really skinny to me last year. Maybe I'm just used to him at this point. Maybe that's all it is. I don't know. Mm. We don't have any like vertical jump numbers on him because he didn't compete at the combine or pro day because he was hurt.
Well,
or was he hurt? I don't remember how that went.
He just, I don't think he wanted to participate.
Okay. But he's got hops. Like he can get up. In the last two practices, he made two plays in which he went up and caught passes that were, you know, not every receiver would get.
Also, like he's not like short. Like, he's 6 foot. Like, he's a decent, not tall, but he's also not like super short or anything. And he has 69 percentile wingspan. So, you know, he has decent length to him. And his arm length is 45 percentile. It's not huge, but he doesn't have short arms. That kind of helps out too.
He's like a spider.
He's like a spider. Not a big spider fan. Not a big bugs fan, I got to say.
Kristen Roach of Roach Realtors hates spiders.
Yeah.
Do you ever get those spiders that like jump?
The jumping? You're talking about like the, what are those called? The cricket spider things?
Yeah.
Yeah, those are freaky.
Sprickets.
Sprickets.
Those are the worst.
My parents had not realized. So they had a bunch of them in their basement. Like, that would just pop up over time. But I think one time more recently, they like looked at the ceiling and there was just like a ton up there. And I was like, oh my God. It was just like a nightmare. So yeah, they're pretty freaky. I mean, like, I'd rather, those aren't as scary to me because it's like, I know it's a cricket, and a cricket to me isn't as scary as a spider, but they are kind of like the sudden nature of them jumping all around. You know what's freaky are the lantern flies, not like on their own. Like, they're fine when you're just laying around or whatever. Yeah. You see one, but I've had this happen like, I don't know, at least like a dozen times, I feel like, where I'll just be walking outside or even at training camp where I'll just be like, you know, looking ahead normally, not thinking twice. And I just like either feel something on my chest or I see something in the very bottom of my peripheral vision and something like crawling up my chest, and I like freak out because those lantern flies, I feel like, will just like start crawling up me. Maybe they think, yeah, I'm a tree, you know, like, because they do that. Like, that's what they do. Like, they like ruin trees, however, how, because they like climb up them. And I don't know, like, I don't know what they do to them, but I know like people wrap stuff around their trees so they can't crawl up past a certain point because it's like bad for the tree. Anyway, any final thoughts? James?
Yeah, my final thought will be on along those lines. Remember when the bee was after you, like years ago at training camp?
Maybe. Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. On the steps. Yeah,
we were on the steps at the NovaCare complex, and you were near the top rail, I assume, as we always are, and a bee was buzzing around you.
It wouldn't, but it wasn't like
you were. You ran down the, I mean, it's how many steps would you say there are? Like 14, 16, something like that?
I don't think it was a situation where I ran at first, like, buzz. It was like, I was giving it some time and it wouldn't go away. So I was like, at this point, I just have to leave because this thing is just like not going away.
And it followed you all the way down the steps. And then like, even when you got to the bottom, like you turned right. And you, that, at that point, you like ran away from it. Mm-hmm. And I was crying laughing up at the top of the steps.
Thanks to me.
It's funny when a bee is bothering other people, yeah, but it really sucks when it's all over you.
That is true. That's a nice final thought. My final thought is a question. And dear people of Ohio, Ohioans, if you will, and Cleveland specifically, although it's more like Berea, Ohio, is where the Browns practice facility is. Lend me your recommendations, if you have any,
for
food, or mostly food, but if anything else at all pops up, mostly food, but anything else you want to throw my way, and Jimmy's way as well, at Brandon Yauten on Twitter and Instagram, at Jimmy Kemsky on Twitter and Instagram. Wouldn't mind hearing some recommendations because we will be out there the next couple days. I fly out on Wednesday. Jimmy, I guess you're driving out tomorrow or day of?
I'm driving out tomorrow morning, yeah.
Okay, driving out tomorrow morning. That tomorrow being Wednesday, August 17th, that's when the Eagles themselves are flying out to Cleveland, where they will practice against Deshaun Watson and the Browns. And by the way, I don't know if you saw this. Did you see Denzel Ward got activated?
I did.
Maybe he will be out there.
I was right that he was hurt. I wasn't 100% on that when I said that on the podcast.
Well, I had a source who told me he was coming off the PUP list, which is why I said it's going to be some good matchups, clearly.
There you go.
But, so the Eagles will be doing that the next couple of days on Thursday and Friday. It'll be a good barometer of where this team is at. And then they will have a walkthrough on Saturday, close to access before their preseason game, the weird preseason rare start time of 1 p.m. on a mm-hmm. Sunday. So that's what's coming up here. Again, as Jimmy mentioned, no more training camp practices open to the media at the NovaCare complex. So, but four total left to go, and that's 25% of training camp, right? Because it'll be 16 days at the end of it. We're 12 days in. We have one more quarter of training camp to go. So that's what's coming up. Make sure you subscribe if you don't already somehow. Leave a rating, review, all of that good stuff. Check out my practice notes at bleedingrenation.com. Jimmy Kemsky's at phillyvoice.com. Make sure you follow the podcast Twitter account at BGN_radio. Make sure you check out our sponsors, Right to Sean Craft Jerky, righttosean.com. Discount code BGN20 for 20% off. Kristen Roach of Roach Realtors and roachrealtors.com, who you can call or text at this phone number,
856-906-9295. 5.
If you're looking to buy, sell, rent a house, or get some advice, you know, just check in for some real estate advice. All right. So that's today's show. We'll be back with you on Thursday for a post-practice recap podcast recording about the Eagles Browns joint training camp practice. Very exciting stuff. So, Jimmy, I will talk to you then.
Goodbye, everybody.
BGN.